All right, let's get into our first segment here. We have Dr. Carla Brown, the Providence of Southmore Incorporated, and also Dr. Isaiah Brown, a board member of the Providence on Southmore. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning and thank you for having us again.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a very interesting organization here, the Providence on Southmore. Exactly what is the Providence on Southmore?
We are a nonprofit organization that purposes to work with high school students transitioning them into college, and we work to support them through completion of college within 5 years.
Okay, now how do you, how long has the Providence on Southmore been in existence?
September 2012.
Okay, so it's relatively new. And so how did it come about, the Providence on Southmore? Why is there a need for the Providence on Southmore?
That's actually a great question. I'll start with your first question. It came about from a vision that was given to me years ago when I was a student at Texas Southern University. That was an obvious need to assist students through college. I came from a family of two parents that graduated from college, so that was the expectation in my home. Whereas with other students, they didn't have that same expectation, or even they didn't even know that there was actually a need for college, or there was no push for college. And I wanted to help students, to improve their long-term their success. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that I knew, that if you could obtain a college degree, that would it doesn't guarantee it, but it mm-hmm. certainly makes things a lot easier to get to those goals.
How pervasive was, based on your experience, was the perception that there was no need to go beyond high school?
Well, when you come from I came from Sunnyside, and mm-hmm. If you didn't have a parent who had attended college, then you didn't even think that as an option. If the advisors at your high school weren't pushing you to get a college degree, then that's not something you did. A lot of students just opted to go and get a job, and they just decided they would work.
And very often there was no push to encourage you to go to college.
Absolutely.
In some cases, the opposite, as a matter of fact. The statistics, the number of individuals who actually get in college, and then, of course, the issue of completing within the expected period of time, I think, seems to be an issue.
A major issue.
Yeah, we hear that talked about a lot here in Texas, for sure, but I'm sure it's an issue across the country. What is the expectation? A student gets into a four-year... First of all, it took me 4 years to finish two-year degree, so it can be challenging sometimes. But what is the expectation of how long it should take for a student to complete a four-year degree?
Well, it's actually measured in a six-year period. So ideally, it would be done during that six-year period. However, I think the best way to do it is to complete it in 4 years. And our mindset with 4 years or 5 years would be that it's less expensive. You're not constantly putting mm-hmm. money into that education and trying to sustain yourself without the adequate funds. So the idea is that we would get these students in school and out within a five-year period.
So what's the holdup? I mean, I know when I was at Prairie View for a time, director of counseling services there, and it was my experience that a lot of the freshmen, they didn't understand, or that, you know, coming to school was to get an education, and the partying should have ended the day before they set foot on campus. But they would spend a great deal of partying, and as a result, there was a high rate of a dropout or students not making it back.
Absolutely. And it's not just the partying, because that's one aspect mm-hmm. of it, but I think that's actually a small aspect of it. I think what happens is students get inundated in debt. They see things that they want, and they decide they want them now.
Yeah, let's talk about that debt, because that blows my mind. Debt.
Mm-hmm.
How did we get there? I mean, why is it that, I mean, what does it cost to go to school here on the average for 1 year?
Probably
$20,000.
Yeah. $20,000.
That includes room, board, and so forth.
In-state.
Okay.
So, yes, sir.
So then what happens? The student, they get student loans? Is that what it is?
Yes.
Okay.
Student loans. There are all kind of various financial aid packages that are offered to students. Most times, if you don't have an academic scholarship or an athletic scholarship, you have to fend for those funds for yourself. So what happens, students are, they have parents, and they depend on their parents' financial information to obtain some type of student loan to support. And the way that the loan system has been restructured, many times if your parents have poor credit, then you are not able to access those funds. So the financial aid assistance is really kind of a lot of red tape there. Mm-hmm. And if you're coming out of at-risk, low-income situations, then more than likely you're going to have someone outside of your immediate family to help you finance that education. And sometimes kids will prioritize and say, I need to go get a job to help pay for school. So
sometimes they say, I need to go get a car.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And use the student loan money for a car
versus my educational expenses.
Right, right.
So there's the priority there. And so that's where we're trying to come in to help with that whole transitioning into adulthood, the first 2 years of college, where we have these what we call millennial students, where mm-hmm. they have really been engaged in social media dynamics, and there's no real sense of what I like to say.
There's no K in computer.
The immediate gratification. The old school, when I grew up coming out of college, there was a sense of hard work, even our parents' hard work, but kids, everything is right at their fingertips.
Yeah.
And so we have to coach them and help them understand why you have to develop the sense and virtue of patience and being humble as you travel this journey of the educational process.
Patience and humility. We're talking with Doctors Isaiah Brown and Carla Brown on the Providence on Sophomore program designed to assist new college students. Our phone number is 713-390-5102, 713-390-5102. I'd like to get you involved in the conversation. Perhaps you're a student. Perhaps you have a student. Perhaps you have a child that is a student, and you have some questions or maybe just some comments. You know, one thing that always confused me, and I don't know, I've been accused of nitpicking and things like that, but I never considered a loan aid, okay? When I consider aid, I'm thinking of a grant or something
yes.
that does not have to be paid back.
Yes.
If it's a loan, you're not helping me, okay?
Absolutely.
Especially if I'm paying you for the loan. So it's more aid for you as opposed to aid for me.
Well, it really depends on how you look at that.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough because, as I said, I didn't have to get a loan. I had my parents that mm-hmm. were able to pay for college, mm-hmm. and I had a scholarship. And I have a twin sister who also had a full scholarship.
Oh, she went to school on your place sometime, right?
No, she had a full scholarship.
That could be worked pretty good.
Yeah, it worked out perfectly. But what you run into is the fact that students get they get loans and they don't use them for the purpose intended. Exactly what you expect them to use them for. And we have to get to a point where we teach the children what the priorities are and get them to line those things
when
up.
When does that begin? When do we begin teaching them?
It actually begins at home because I watched my parents.
7 years old, 8 years old, 9 years old?
It's at birth.
Inception.
Yeah, because you know, even when you're in the belly, you're learning, and you don't
save
know what all
money.
Of that means.
Save your money.
Exactly. You don't know what all that means, but it does actually mean something in the long run.
Yeah, and it's so here we are. We've got the students. They've gone through the high school process. They present themselves on the front doors of the college campus. They go to class, and they hear about this thing called a syllabus. And then what is this? You know, I mean, and of course they don't have good study habits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so is that where you come in? Is that one of the things that you help them do?
Absolutely. We like to think of ourselves as surrogates, mm-hmm. that whether parents don't know or if they're just not able to assist the student, that's what we're here for. We deal with students with, of course, degree completion support through tutoring. We have internships that we try to work out for the students where we match them with a good fit, mentorships, life coaching, and volunteerships, because we recognize that there's a need to be within that community and serving others.
Isaiah, you're at the University of Houston downtown,
correct? Yes, sir. Yes,
sir. And you're involved in assessing the students when they present themselves?
Yes, my role at the University of Houston downtown is I'm the Director of Assurance of Learning and Assessment. And
what's that word, assurances?
Assurance of Learning
and Assurance
assessment.
Of Learning, okay.
Yes, sir. And
that's
what
a new title they just came up with.
certainly, within a heightened era of increased accountability for all universities to graduate our students in the 4 to 6 year time frame, if you want to maintain your accreditation by your disciplinary bodies, they have guidelines that they want you to demonstrate that student learning is actually occurring and you're assessing whether students are meeting those targets on a year-to-year basis. And so when they come up for site review, I know a lot of people are familiar with SACS and our accreditation bodies, AACSB.
You give them all the coffee and donuts they want.
NCATE, ABET, there are a lot of different agencies out there. But the point I'm trying to make is that we as universities have to demonstrate to the accreditation bodies that student learning is occurring and that if it's not there, we're taking holistic approaches to weave that back into the curriculum if something is missing. And so it's just a systematic process of documentation of evidence that that student learning is occurring.
Okay, so every time, so each student is assessed before, I mean, is this... before they determine their major, or I mean, is this assessing them to see what curriculum would be a best fit for them, or whether they need remediation, or exactly?
Many times when you get to the level where I am in the college, a lot of students have already matriculated through the general ed curriculum, so their past developmental studies, they're actually in the colleges where they're focusing on their major coursework. Okay. So they are in the business curriculum. And so the assurance of learning is just going through, if our outcome is writing for this particular standard, then how did we assess writing? What courses did we use to assess writing? What student work samples did we look at? What were the results of those samples? And so there's already in how you say the outcomes that we're looking for based on our criteria for success.
So you have your benchmarks that you
yes,
want them to
and
reach,
so that criteria for success is what you measure against. And if you don't meet your criteria for success, naturally, you know, well, what's going on? We got to dig a little bit deeper. If we only made 60% of the target with 70%, our strategy might have been flawed. And so you take that back into consideration and you share information with faculty to help improve the learning and teaching paradigm.
So you'd be looking at the process, not necessarily an individual student.
Yes, absolutely. We don't necessarily single students out in assessment. We look at groups of students as it pertains to the majors that we offer, accounting versus EIS versus management, things of that nature.
Okay, let's go to the telephone. We're on the you're on the air with Dr. Isaiah Brown and Dr. Carla Brown. Who are we speaking to? Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
What's your name?
Laron.
Laron?
Yes.
Okay, you have a question for our guest?
Yes, what I want to talk about, you know, we acquire this debt going into education, and we do need an education, but it is a limited system that we are paying for, okay? When I say limited, there are things that, you know, I'm a business major, but you don't read about Moses Powell, Mr. Banks. You don't hear about these people at all. These people who achieved in business, these people who created in business back in the 50s and 60s, and we're acquiring a hell of a lot of debt. No, we're extremely limited in what we're getting for our money.
So you're saying that within the curriculum, you're not learning about individuals who've made significant accomplishments
Absolutely.
And contributions. Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. And I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to leave you with this. Since the outbreak of Eric Snowden, he proved the only people that need degrees and certifications is us, because this man was white with a GED. He was over black people that graduated from Pepperdine, which is the proving ground for the CIA, and he had the complexion for the protection. I'm going to leave y'all with that. Good morning.
Okay, well, not exactly sure where he was coming from with Mr. Snowden, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just want to comment on what he was saying about the debt. As an African-American male coming through the educational system, I did play football and baseball in college, so that helped me sustain some of my expenses. After that ended, that pool of money, I had to take out student loan. I have a family. So, of course, naturally, early on when you're graduating college, you don't have the experience. You have the degree, but you don't have the experience. And so it's like a double-edged sword. You mm-hmm. can have all the experience, but if you move up, if you want to move into senior management, some people will say, oh, well, you don't have the degree, so you can't be a senior manager. On the other hand, for young people coming out of college, they say, oh, you have a degree, but you don't have the experience. And so they go hand in hand. And so really, you can't have one without the other. You know, in my experience, the education gets you to the table to have the conversation, to gain entrance into the opportunity to earn a decent living for your family.
I would also, I don't think, just as they would say, learning out of books is necessarily the only education one needs.
Absolutely. Because speaking on that, one of the things we do at the Providence is we take a holistic approach to understanding our students' needs. Mm-hmm. Most times our at-risk students is not just academic deficiencies that occur. There are some social, emotional, psychological, spiritual things, imbalances that are in place that impacts your ability to fully engage in the school curriculum. So I agree with what you're saying. It's that co-curriculum that supports the academic curriculum, where our students who are at risk, they need guidance and support, and they need to discuss these kinds of things that's impacting their ability to fully engage. Because, you know, we're coming out of low-income situations, we definitely need to know how we're going to have our next meal. So that's a real conversation. And so from our perspective at the Providence, we already know that the schools are not graduating our students at a rate that is acceptable in 4 to 6 years, and we just want to be able to support the universities here locally who serve our at-risk students, so that our students can achieve and go on to having a degree and earning independent living as they continue to matriculate through life.
You're here with Dr. Isaiah Brown. He's in the assessment department, with a long title, at the University of Houston downtown. And also Dr. Carla Brown, the founder of the Providence on Southmore. Let's go to the telephone. You're on the air. Good morning. Hello.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Wonderful. Thank you. Who are you?
My name is Sherry.
Sherry?
I'm calling regarding Dr. Brown, and they're talking about the assessments at U of H. My question is, he made a statement which was absolutely correct about when kids go to school, which my kids finished college, and if you don't have the experience, they don't want to hire you, but you have the degree. Then if you have the experience, but you don't have the degree, they still won't promote you to where you need to be. To that other gentleman that stated something about Eric Snowden, his point was, here's Eric Snowden in this high-paying position for the CIA or wherever he worked. He didn't have a degree, but he was white, and you promote them all the time. So my question, that was his point, but my question to you is, when people are having these issues, these young people are coming out of college and they're not able to obtain a job because they have a degree, but they don't have the experience, how can y'all help them?
Okay. I just wanted to get in there with Snowden. It wasn't as if he was hired by the CIA or whatever agency he worked for. He worked for a contractor, okay? And it would be the same as if you had a company, you had employees. It could be your baby sister. She may not have a degree either, but you got this contract, so you put them in that role. So that's where that came in. It's not like he was vetted. Okay, oh, he was a Boy Scout. He dropped out of school in the 11th grade, but he's a good guy, so we're going to put him in that role. It didn't work that way. So, you know, just want to, you know, it wasn't as if the government said that this is the way it's going to be. So that's the issue with the contractors and so forth. But Dr. Brown.
Yes. To your point about experience and education, the whole reason for internships and volunteerism, the reason that we push that service learning in the schools is so that you do have an avenue to gain some experience. So when students hear about the career service department within the university, oftentimes we have to be proactive and go and seek out the resources that they have. For every school that I've ever been a part of, the career services has a plethora of resources that students are able to reach out to, but it's the students coming to get the information and taking that information in to use it to their advantage. Internships, volunteerships is a critical part of my development, and I would encourage parents, students, internships, volunteerships, that is the way to go, so that when you get your degree, you have some experience to pull from. Other than that, you're going to graduate with a college degree and go into an entry-level position to build your experience base. From there, you may decide to go to graduate school to get an advanced degree if you want to aspire to upper middle management. But you have to have the experience through those internships and volunteer opportunities.
And that's why that's a major part of what we do with the Providence. We expect that a student will do an internship. We expect that they will do volunteerships that don't pay, but you get some experience. And that's the piece that we have to teach our children to understand, that you may not get financial compensation, but you're getting an experience that you can't pay for, and you're getting references. That's the other side, because oftentimes students graduate, they don't have references when they graduate. They don't have someone that can vouch for them and say that Carla Brown can do X, Y, and Z.
And she's honest, shows up on time.
Exactly.
You know, those are important characteristics. Your honesty, your getting along well with other people, interacting with others, can work in a diverse environment, diverse culturally and otherwise. Those are very and very important characteristics. How do you get the students that you mentor?
Basically, we recruit them, and through opportunities such as this, we want parents to know, we want students to know, because there actually are some homeless students out there that don't have parents backing them, and we want them to know that they can call us, and we do everything that we do free of charge. Mm. We've been very fortunate to have
everybody stop what they were doing just then.
Free of charge, we do we offer these services to students. And oftentimes those students don't understand that they need the services until it's too late.
Yeah.
We want to support them before they drop out, before they get disgruntled.
Before that second quiz.
Exactly. Well, exactly.
Wait a minute. What is this?
We have tutoring that we offer the students. We have mentors. We have mentorships, life coaches, opportunities for the students. But they have to reach out to us.
How
and
do
connect.
They reach out to you?
Good question. They can reach us couple of ways. One way, they can reach us by telephone at 832-726-TPOS or 8767. They can also reach us online at our website at www.theprovidence.org.
Now,
and you can also Google search us. We actually show up on Google as The Providence on Southmore.
Now, work with community college students like HCC and Lone Star and Alvin and all of those, or just the...
We do not discriminate.
Okay.
And actually, though our mission says that we work with students transitioning them into college, we do want our students to complete college. But if that's not their path, then we're not going to say, oh, we're not going to support that student. If it's a two-year degree that they're looking for, we will support them. If it's a certificate at a trade school, we will support them. Our main thing is that we want students to get to a point where they realize they need something bigger than a high school diploma, bigger than a GED, so that they can say they have a piece of paper that says, I can do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think for me, I would think that if one is unsure, perhaps a two-year degree might be a good stepping stone.
We actually, and that is an excellent stepping stone, and it's also an economical stepping stone that a lot of students are actually taking up. But what we also do is we offer one of our services, planning and placement. We do this a lot with the high school students, where we actually take them through an interest inventory. We get them an opportunity to say, I would like to do 2 more years of school. I would like to do 4 more years of school. I would like to do more than that. And they, the program that we use with them will help them to, them to select careers that actually fit their interests and the number of years that they're willing to continue in school.
Okay.
And Dr. Brown, for Hulse High School students in that program that you're speaking of, do they have to be graduating seniors, or can you take them a little bit earlier when they're in high school so that they can kind of get on the path to having some type of plan once they go to college?
We never turn a student away. We never do that. However, the services that we do offer, we want to make sure that it's leading them to something. Okay. We're not just giving tutoring services. I mean, because we do have students that we're tutoring and that we have been tutored in high school. We have a wonderful group of volunteers that work with us. And, I mean, I can't tell you how many inquiries I get on a weekly basis for people that want to help. We need to know that this is a need, and then we put the post out. You'd be surprised at how many people come to us and say, I'm willing to work, I'm willing to help.
And that's a good thing.
It's an excellent thing.
Now, you don't charge for your services, so how are you funded?
We're funded through generous donations from the community.
Okay. It really takes a village.
Exactly. And we want people to know that they can go to our website and that there is no donation too small. If it can be $1, $5, $10, $10,000, whatever your pockets can stand, we want you to know that this is a needed resource in our community where we will personally work with students to meet their needs. This is not a group activity. This is something we individually do.
That sounds great. Hey, well, we've been talking with Dr. Isaiah Brown, who is a member of the board of the Providence on South Moore, and also Dr. Carla Brown, the founder of the Providence on South Moore. And again, I asked the question off mic, but how did the name come about in 10 seconds or less?
In 10 seconds or less, it's about provision. Providence means provision, and I believe that God always has a ram in the bush. It actually comes from that story of Abraham and his son, and that God made provisions, and I believe that God will make provisions if you believe. And so we're asking people to come, to call us, to go online, and there's a apply today button that they can select, and they can put their information in. We will return that call within 48 hours, and we want to get them going to make sure that they graduate within 5 years.
That sounds like to me the help you're waiting for is at theprovidence.org, right?
Theprovidence.org.
All right. Thank you both, Dr. Carla Brown and Isaiah Brown, for being a part of the Sunday Morning Live today. We're Magic 102.1, the People's Station.